your brand is one of the easiest ways to build your business because it compresses the trust timeline. So in any new relationship, especially in financial services where you're helping people with their life savings, there's a transference of trust that is happening by you having a brand that you don't even have to say to them because they can see it.
This is Bridging the Gap with your host, Matt Reiner.
El Petrillo. How are you? Welcome to Bridging the Gap. Welcome.
Hi there. Thank you. I'm good. I'm excited to dive into this today.
I'm super honored that you're here. As we were talking before we recorded, which I need to start recording at the beginning because there's always good stuff beforehand. But this is a topic near and dear to my heart, and I'm just really appreciative of you taking time. I know how busy you are and the time intensiveness of one-to-one coaching and brand building. So I just really appreciate you taking time. But today we're going to be talking all about thought leaders, becoming a thought leader, promoting your personal brand, building your personal brand. Mm-hmm. You know, it's something that's so key, especially in a business for financial advisors where your personal brand is so important. And you're just located, are you located up in just north of us here in Nashville? Is that right?
I'm in Nashville.
Booming Nashville?
Yep. I am. Nashville. Right. Vegas. Mm-hmm.
Very good. Yeah. Booming up there. Everybody's moving to Nashville.
I'm trying to get out.
That, you know, it's similar to Atlanta where we've gotten so many people that have come down here. It's just gotten so crowded and, you know, it's brought a new dynamic to the city, but it's, you know, with growth, there's good and bad, right? There's good and bad to both of them. Mm-hmm. But before we dive in, I've got so many questions, did tons of research on this. And like I said, this is something that I focus on all the time. And I've got so much to learn. So a lot of this comes from, you know, how I can learn that hopefully other people can learn from as well. But before we do, you know, you are the director of strategic growth for Brand Builders Group. Now I have to ask though, and I always like to get to know our guests a little bit before we get into the content, but what did the 13-year-old Elle want to be when she grew up?
I wanted to be an entertainment lawyer. So
Lawyer.
Yep.
Tell me more.
I wanted to represent athletes and do their contracts. So that's ultimately what my goal and vision was at some point in my life. That's what I wanted.
Now, was that driven by that you played sports growing up or that your parents were involved with sports? What was the driver of that?
Yeah, I've always been an athlete my entire life. That was a huge part of my life. I was obsessed with basketball in high school. Everything was about basketball for me. And then I always wanted to be a lawyer. So I kind of did the next best thing, which was sales, which I learned that in order to be a great attorney, you usually have to be a great salesperson. And so I just kind of went down a different career path from there. But I've always been attracted to law. I have a huge desire for justice and what's right and what's wrong and just making sure that I can help people in any way I can. So that's just what I wanted at the time.
I'm going to try to stay away from having any arguments then on this podcast because you know I think that you'll probably whip me to shreds on that. But so tell me though, navigate me through, and you said you got into sales. You kind of alluded to that in that point you just made, but going from 13-year-old Elle who wanted to be a entertainment lawyer to now on the brand building side, personal brand building side. Tell us how kind of the story between then and now.
Yeah, there's a lot of twists and turns from there. But actually, it's funny you say 13. When I was 13, my father passed away. And so, and it was very sudden. It happened very quickly. And overnight, my mom became a single mom of three girls. So thank gosh, my mom had a great job. She always made great money. And so she was able, our lifestyle didn't change too much. Actually, I can't even say I felt it really change that much from after my dad died. But what I realized in that moment is that anything can happen overnight. And I have friends whose parents passed away that really actually affected the way that their lives were. Mine did obviously emotionally, but financially, from a financial standpoint, it really didn't. And I always wanted to be in control of my own income at that point. And then as time went on and I see people get divorced or I hear stories of women unable to get out of relationships because of money, it's like that always has been something that drove me was I wanted to have the financial security that no matter what happened, I could take care of myself and not have to rely on someone else. So then in college, I decided to go do the Disney internship program. And I had the best job at Disney. I was a lifeguard at the water park, which is the funnest job at Disney, in my opinion. And while I was there, I met someone who I started dating. And this person was telling me all about how in his summer before, he went and sold door to door, worked 80, 90, 100-hour weeks, working straight commission, paying their own expenses. They moved to a new city, like they knocked on doors to find a place to live. Anyways, he sold books door to door. And my response was like, you're nuts. I would never do that. Until he cheated on me. And he cheated on me. And I said, you know what? Screw you. I'm going to do it. And I'm going to do it better than you. And I did. And so that's how I really got into sales, was I started selling in the summers door to door, where I would wake up at 5:59 a.m., I would take an ice cold shower, and then I would go knock for 12, 14 hours a day, 6 days a week in an area that I didn't know anyone except the people I was working with. And so I did that for 3 years. I recruited teams. I moved to Montana randomly to recruit a team out there. When I got out of college, I was like, I do not want to go to law school. I'm done with school. I want to go make money. I was looking at how much law school was and how much work law school was and how it takes a long time and you won't have a life after school. And I was just like, I don't think that's for me anymore. And so I joined on with a sister company where we would relocate to a new city every 4 months and do a sales blitz. So I went from door to door to cold calling to learning how to work really strong referrals. I've lived now in 23 cities since I was 17. And yes, so more than one a year.
Wow.
And over time, what happened is that company grew to a company of 250 coaches. We were doing sales coaching, sales training, sales consulting. We had a speakers bureau. I was out speaking all the time. I've done hundreds, if not thousands, presentations. In 2018, myself and two other females were unexpectedly relieved of that company. Then from there, a few months later, we started along with another, there was a few of us that had started Brand Builders Group. So it's owned by Rory and AJ Vaden. They're the founders, but then there was a founding team that I was a part of. So that's kind of a long story short. So
now I'm just curious, what have you learned or what could you take from those days of knocking on doors? Because I'm assuming that a lot of listeners don't remember those days because, and sometimes even the cold calling days have become a little bit less common. But what did you take from those days or learn from selling that way that you can kind of tangentially incorporate into what you're doing and helping others do? What are some of those lessons that, you know, you're instilling that maybe some people wouldn't get if they never had that experience before?
I don't know if they wouldn't get it if they never had this experience, but I know it was one of my biggest superpowers today when I'm working is my self-talk. And so a lot of times when we're working with clients on building their personal brand, they got into their business. Like, let's take financial advisors. Most financial advisors don't get into this line, this industry, to become a salesperson. And then you get into it and you realize sales is a huge part of this industry. Like, I have to figure this out if I want to grow my book of business, right? And I see this all the time is that people really struggle with sales being a dirty word. They struggle with sales feeling pushy, uncomfortable, all these things. For me, I think my self-talk has made me really, really strong at sales. I think the other thing I learned going door to door is how to connect with someone immediately. So you can put me in any room. I'm an introvert by nature, but you can put me in any room in any situation and I can connect with almost every person in that room on a personal level deeply. So whether that's just having common ground or knowing what questions to ask to get them to open up, I think that's another thing. So it's building quick relationships that are deep very quickly, and self-talk would be two things. And then the last is working smarter, not harder. Now, I didn't necessarily master that when I was selling door to door, but I was learning how do you, again, ask questions so you know which houses to stop at, which ones to skip over, which, you know, who are the power names of the neighborhood that everyone knows and everyone wants to be like. And so there are just things about learning to hack the system and work a little bit smarter that I learned from that too.
Yeah. And I think the self-talk thing is a lesson that is harder and harder to learn and accept, I guess, because mm-hmm. especially in a world of instant gratification. I mean, that's something that I learned drastically when we were selling technology back in the day is you get told so many no's. And it's easy to be like, yeah, I know, I'm going to get told no's. But when you get told no consistently, you start questioning what you're doing, how you're doing it, why you're doing it. Mm-hmm. And if you let yourself go down that spiral, other people will see that right out the gate. Like, they're no dummy to that. And the desperation is there. So that lesson, I'm curious, how do you help people? And then I want to get into kind of, I want to go through kind of your process, because it starts with personal brand building and personal brand. And we'll get there in a second. But how do you help people, especially, you know, some of these younger advisors or younger sales individuals that haven't had to really worry about the negatives, right? They've everybody got a trophy. It's hard. It's harder these days, and it's easier to compare than ever before. So how do you help with that?
Yeah, I think one of my favorite sales principles, and I don't know if Rory came up with this or if it's from, I have no idea who came up with it, but it's you put your confidence in your activity, not your results. And so you hold yourself to a standard of activity, knowing that if the activity is there, the results will come. They might not come right away. They might come in the future, right? So I have a colleague who I had a call with this person earlier this week, and they were saying, gosh, I'm in a slump right now. Like, I'm scared. Like, did I lose it? And this person doesn't have a strong sales background, but they were doing so well. And they're like, I think I lost it. I'm like, you don't ever lose it, right? You're going to have these slumps. If you just focus on the activity, it's going to work out. It just always does. And so that's a habit that I got into, like, door to door. That was all it was about, was how many doors you knock on, how many conversations did you have? How many presentations did you do, right? And then that will always lead to sales. So I think that's one. And then my other favorite affirmation that I probably still use today is some will, some won't. So what? Who's next? It's like, there's always someone next. So if you dwell on the no's, right? Or if you get too excited about the yeses, or you get too upset about the no's, like, you lose focus. And so I think it's just as important to not get yourself super jazzed and like let those endorphins hit every time you get a yes. I think where you've really mastered is where you expect the yes. Like, that's part of it. That's what people should say to you. If you're doing all the things right, like, you're going to get a yes. And that just is what should happen. So I don't get super excited anymore about those. And I also just don't get upset when people say no.
You know, that line, that mentality. And I love that idea of, you know, confidence in activities, not the outcomes. I mean, that aligns with a lot of things that I hear, you know, many sports psychologists, I'm big in sports, and, you know, sports psychologists talk about, and athletes talk about, some of the best athletes in the world, is that they fall in love with the process, not the outcome. And, you know, I think that that's such an important thing that we need to fall in love with as a sales team. And then also, you know, you're really just defined by your next action. What has happened doesn't matter, but what you do next is what is your definition of who you are at that moment in time. And but having that mentality is easy. Executing on and pushing through and having the persistence and the patience is extremely difficult. It's extremely difficult for anybody to have on that side.
Well, it's interesting because switching into personal branding, but a lot of these principles apply to building your brand, right? Because people get bored with the basics and they start allowing distractions to come in and overcomplicating. It's the same thing when you're building your personal brand. Is one of the biggest reasons why people never take off with their brand is they get bored with doing the things consistently that they need to do, and they get distracted, which means then they lose traction. And then also the same thing about the activity, right? Like, building your brand, there's a lot of activity that happens behind the scenes of the biggest brands that no one ever sees, right? Of the athletes that no one ever sees, of any top person that you can think of. There's all these things happening behind the scenes that is activity that no one wants to do, but it's the difference that makes, like, that will set you apart from everyone else. And so even when you build a brand, like, it's the same exact thing there.
You got to have that persistence. And if you're waiting to get those outcomes, which is exactly, you know, what we're diving into here, you know, and is if you're waiting just to judge your success based on your outcomes, it could take forever and you better be playing a long game. And it's hard as just human nature to play that long game. Mm-hmm. But you were alluding to it there in that comment, which is really kind of my question around personal brand is, yeah, I'm curious about some of those things that happen behind the scenes of building a brand that nobody really sees, right? Everybody sees content of thought leaders and brand and personal brands that are very well done. They see all of the speaking engagements they do. They see all that. But there's so much, as you alluded to, behind the scenes that you have to do and that you don't really understand that you have to do. And when you start doing it, you realize that you feel like you're doing it wrong. But the realization is that everybody does that and you have to do that. What is, from your perspective, some of that unseen and necessary work that it takes to build the brand that everybody sees and cherishes?
The number one thing is patience. It's knowing that it's going to come if you keep doing the things. It's just a matter of when. And so that's more of a high level is patience. But then when you get into, you know, the nitty gritty of it, everyone gets excited about social media. Not, here's the thing. Everyone says they hate social media, but they think of branding with social media, right? There's this whole mental thing that people have around social media, but ultimately people get excited like, ooh, I want the logos and the colors and the fonts and I want the pretty website or, you know, something that I go, wow, I'm so proud to share this with people. And oh my gosh, look at this curated feed and how much it flows and it's just going to attract people. Like that's what people think of when they think of personal branding, right? And that is fun and it does feel good to have those things, but to get there, for those to actually matter, for them to actually do their job, because they're all tools, you need to have a strategy on the back end. And so what happens is a lot of people will take this course and then hire this coach and then get an implementer to build something for them. And no one's talking to each other. No one is creating this strategy together. They're all siloed. They're all doing what they do. And the person that's hiring all these people or investing in all these courses is going, I'm just doing what you tell me to do because they don't know either. So I would say the first thing is if you're serious about building a brand, partner with a firm like ours. It doesn't have to be ours, but that have a comprehensive approach to building your brand, because building your brand is just like building a business. It is the business of you, right? I can go on and on about this topic. I think another thing I hear often is people go, oh my gosh, I don't want to do another ideal client avatar exercise. I've done these ICAs. I've done it a million times. I know who I serve. And 9 times out of 10, they do not know who they serve because a lot of these exercises don't go deep enough. And so they'll just do a high level like demographics, a little bit about the industry, a little bit age range, male, female, whatever it might be. And then they'll just say some characteristics about this person. They go, I know my person. We take it probably like 10 steps deeper where we really want to get into the heart and mind of this person. But more importantly than that is we're making you narrow it down to where I can actually speak to this person. I can see them in my head. I know exactly who you're talking to. I can have a conversation with them because I know who they are. Most people do not want to get that specific because they have this fear of, if I get that specific, that means I'm cutting out all this other business. And that's not what that means. It doesn't mean you don't service these other people. It just means that you're attracting more of who you are best positioned to serve. And as a byproduct, you're going to attract other people.
I want to talk about that avatar aspect, and I want to dive into this a little bit deeper for a second, because I think there's two things that I related to. As you were talking, I was jotting down notes and like I was reminiscing to some of my days in technology. We started our first technology business, and it was just to go replicate another business and say that we could do it a little bit better. And there was no, I didn't have a convinced understanding of the purpose of it. To your point of like the personal brand individual that's hiring everybody else and doesn't really have a cohesive strategy, it's hard to just follow what other people tell you to do, because eventually things are going to happen that you're going to have to make a judgment call. And if you don't have the full understanding of the vision, purpose, and everything deep into it, it's going to be hard to make that judgment call. And you're going to go look for the answers and it's just going to become Frankenstein and unapproachable. And I think that that's something huge. And the other point is the avatar aspect. I've always struggled with narrowing in my avatar because that I'm a people pleaser. I want everybody to like what I write. I don't want to lose out. I'm already in a niche market maybe. And then I don't want to make it even more niche. And so you keep it broad, but you do see when you narrow it in, everybody thinks that you're only focused on them. No, you're going to attract. There's so many around the periphery that are going to be attracted to that, that you're going to touch into. And so for those that kind of have that similar feeling to me, that, you know, narrowing in is so difficult and it's going to lose the faith or lose the opportunity of touching more people. And maybe they're in a niche market, like they're a niche advisor and already focused on one different demographic or so, but they need to narrow in even deeper. How do you suggest them to overcome that mental block that they have to be able to really go deep on their avatar?
Yeah, I have a million things to say to that. So where do I start?
Anywhere. We'll get it all around.
I'll start with mindset. So what it's coming down to, why people resist it, you said it, is I don't want to lose out. They are so afraid of losing business that they are limiting their thinking and they don't have an abundance mindset. There is plenty, even if you are the smallest niche ever, for you to serve everyone in that niche or that niche, whatever you want to call it, like, it's almost impossible. Because here's the thing, not everyone's going to like you. Not everyone's going to align with you. Not everyone is going to want to do business with you. There are some people that only want, like, for me, a coach that it was really important in, not my last coach, but the one before that, that I had a female coach for what I was working on. There are men that do exactly what she does. I wanted a female, right? So right there, doesn't matter what you do, you're going to lose me, right? And so part of this is just the limiting belief that we struggle with. So I would challenge you is to write down what all your beliefs are on this and go, okay, well, if that was true, this happens. If that isn't true, this happens. And how is this belief serving me? Because we only have hold on to beliefs that we are gaining something from. So for example, I'm losing it all. Well, that's keeping you in the safety net of, okay, if you did narrow it down, what do you have to do differently to attract more of the right people? So that's by saying I will lose out, that's keeping you safe in this bubble of I don't have to change anything. But if you did narrow it down, that would require you to do some things differently. So I would just say, look at your limiting beliefs around this and how they're serving you and what needs to happen to change that belief. And if you did change that belief, then how would you benefit, right? Because there's always a benefit there. So I would start with mindset. Then I would look at the example of, have you ever read a book or heard a podcast or saw a speaker on stage and the whole time you're sitting there reading it or listening, you're going, they're talking to me. Like, how do they know? Did someone tell them about me? Right? And that's by design. That's not by accident. It's because that person knows their avatar so well and they know their challenges and they know their beliefs and they know what keeps them up at night and they know what they want, that they're able to curate a message specifically for them. And so when you don't have that clarity, your website copy never really lands right. Your social media content doesn't really attract or gain traction with anyone. And any publication, like let's say you're blogging, it's like, nah, no one really shares it because they don't know who it's for. So then it also makes it really hard for people to refer you if you're going, I can serve everyone. Versus for me, my avatar is a seven-figure entrepreneur who is a female, who is a mom with kids, right? Who runs a service-based business. Like that is my person. I can go deeper into it. My secondary audience is the same thing, but a male, right? So they could be similar, but ultimately I'm going to speak to the female first. The way I present myself is going to be female-oriented, but I still love working with men. It's just not who I know best, right? Because I'm not a man. And so with that, it allows you to just create stuff that lands faster. So if you're going, wow, if my website's not really converting and my social media isn't really doing anything and no one's really reading my blogs or opening my newsletter and I'm not really getting booked to speak and clients are coming in, but I'm losing business to other people, I would go, maybe my messaging isn't clear enough. Maybe I'm not speaking to them to the point that like they're going, wow, they get me. And they know my problems and they know how to solve my problems, right? Which makes them want to work with you more. So there's only benefits to narrowing that down. And there are zero consequences to it because it's not like people just aren't going to come to you, right? They're not outside your ideal audience. You're still going to attract people, but it's allowing you to know where you should spend your time and your energy and your resources to be in front of as many of those people as possible.
What strikes me and what comes to mind as you say this is that, you know, if you're writing to everybody and you don't have a narrow of avatar, then it's not really landing with anybody. So the risk of you going and trying to land with other people, the people that it doesn't necessarily land with that are outside your avatar, your content hasn't really landed with them either anyways. Mm-hmm. So there's really no downside to it. That the only upside is that you now have a segment of people that it lands squarely on. Yeah. And everybody else, if they've been reading it and it hasn't landed, they'll still read it and it may eventually land. Maybe they move into your avatar over time.
Perfect example. The last mastermind I did was with a company called Alter Call. And about 2 years ago, I was looking for a mastermind group of entrepreneurs that was spiritually based. Okay. Didn't know this thing existed. Came across Ryan Blair, whose whole thing is spiritual entrepreneurship. Never heard that term coined in my life until him. But it was like spiritual entrepreneurship. Sign me up. That's what I'm looking for, right? And it was awesome. But that's just like he knew who his avatar was. And I was able to go, and I'm not his perfect avatar, I'll say that. But with that, it still attracted me. I'm not his ideal client because I don't own the business, right? But I'm in the secondary tertiary audience of his ideal client. So he still attracted me because it was what I was looking for. But he was so clear on what he did.
At the right moment, at the right time, it struck a chord with the mentality you had. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, there's so many courses. We'll continue moving on the personal brand side. But thinking about building the brand, there's so many courses on like how to get more followers and more engagement on LinkedIn content, how to write better Twitter content. There's courses and there's newsletters, how to write a six-figure newsletter, right? Everybody can get bogged down in all of this. It makes what personal branding is, you know, a little bit disingenuous because I think it's more than just that. What goes into the strategy of building a personal brand? Yes, we understand we have to do an avatar, but then the execution phase, what does that look like? What is that kind of sphere of execution or tactics that build a personal brand that maybe some people don't realize are actually there?
Yeah, I can share our path, whether it's the right path or the wrong path. I don't know. I believe it's the right one. It's been working pretty well for us and our clients. So I'll just share that. But it's first important to understand what personal branding is. And it's the formalization, digitization, and monetization of your reputation. So it's formalizing, digitizing, and monetizing your reputation. So whether you like it or not, you have a personal brand because it's ultimately your reputation, what people think of when they think of you, right? So you can either curate it or you can allow other people to. You can, and when I say curate, I doesn't mean like create a version that's not aligned with who you really are. It's just making sure that you're represented how you want to be represented in front of other people, online, offline, all the places. So it's that. The other thing that I want to really make sure I emphasize is people think personal branding is about them. Mm. If you make it about you, you're doing it wrong. Personal branding is about serving other people. Your brand exists to serve other people because there's people out there that need you. And so that's why knowing who you serve is also super important, and also why people struggle with the idea of personal branding, because they struggle with it because they think it's about them and it's not. So I just want to share those two things. Now, the journey that we call it the Brand Builders Group journey. So this is our proprietary like method that we use when it comes to helping people formalize, digitize, and monetize their brand. We start with what's called finding your brand DNA. This part is where we're getting clear on four things: who you serve, what problem you solve for them, your unique way of solving that problem, and how you're going to monetize your brand from that. Okay. So that's, and then packaging yourself. And there's other things, but those are like the four key parts that we're really getting clear on. Then from there, we go into what's called captivating content. So this is where we help you create your body of work. We take your message and we go, okay, whether you're speaking on stage, you're being interviewed on a podcast, you're creating content for online, you're writing stuff for your sales page, your website, you're creating your own process of how you're going to take people through this. We're going to help you create that methodology and your own thought leadership that can be repurposed in all those different areas. This is your body of work that you're going, gosh, I am really putting thought and attention into how do I want to help someone experience me and overcome this problem and work through it? And what's the messaging? And what are the behavior changes and the frameworks that I need to put in place that make them go, there's something of substance here? Then we go into world-class presentation craft is about how do you present this material to the world? So this could be crafting your keynote, your TED talk. It could be just like a seminar presentation. It could be ultimately, how do you deliver it? Like with vocal variety, how do you get create emotion? Like when you're on a podcast, right? How do you move people to go, I need more of this? So that's all part of phase one. Phase two is now where we talk about the digitization. So your revenue engine is your online sales ecosystem. And so here, what we're doing is we're going, okay, what needs to be your calls to action? Let's write out all of your copy for this person, right? What are the funnels that we need to create that drive to X? What is the social media strategy to get people off those platforms and onto your website? What are the blogs and the sidebars that we're doing so that way you can convert more people? What is your offer structure? Oftentimes people's offers suck. They don't make sense. And so we want to make sure that they have a really strong value prop based on what their people want. So it's creating your online sales ecosystem. This is also down the road. One of the mistakes people make is they invest money on ads way too quick, right? When you're talking about the courses and like how to, you know, write a six-figure newsletter, whatever it might be. These are all great things, but if you do them at the wrong time, they're still wrong. And so paid traffic is something that people typically do too prematurely, and then they get frustrated and they're not getting the results. So when you are ready for paid traffic, we'll go, how do you get an ROI on it? Then podcasting, right? So if you want, and not everyone has to do this, if you're called to podcast, how do you create, build, launch, grow, scale, monetize your podcast? And how do you pitch yourself to get on the podcast that you want to be on that are aligned with your audience? Then we also have this bucket of selling. So one of the biggest mistakes that people make is they focus only on what happens online. What we do is we marry the offline and the online. So there needs to be an offline component, right? So sales skills, how do you generate referrals? How do you build quick relationships? How do you ask for the business? How do you overcome objections, right? Like all of the things, mindset, characteristics of a great salesperson, but really understanding the game of sales. Bestseller launch plan. So when you're getting ready to launch a podcast, launch a brand, launch a new service, whatever it might be, launch a book, regardless if it's a self-published or not, how do you make sure you have a successful launch every single time? And then keynote calendar, full keynote calendar is, we really believe one of the best ways to drive leads is to go speak. Go speak for free, go get paid to speak. It doesn't matter to us, but get in front of your target audience so you can show them, not just tell them what you do, show them what you do, where then you could drive leads. So this is all about how do you build an element of speaking into your business? And then the last phase, last bucket is scaling, which is ultimately, what are the operations, systems, and people you need to put in place to continue to scale your business? And so that's kind of the high-level journey. Again, I know I just said a lot there, but you can see it's really tailored and in-depth. And this is really a three-year journey. It's not just a six-month thing. It's we're doing all of it because we know this all plays a part in the success that you have with your brand.
That was a question I was going to, because that process is an incredibly detailed and it's a proven process that has been shown to work. You know, I was going to say, well, how long does that usually take? And 3 years is an investment of time. And I think there was something really, really, I thought, poignant on y'all's website that said, you know, I think many people struggle who are at day one because they compare themselves to people that are at day 100 and they try to do the tactics that they see day 100 persons doing and they try to do it at day one. And it reminds me of the book Mastery by Robert Greene, where he's talking about, you know, apprenticeship and the strategy to go through to become a master is that you have to go through it. If you try to jump, you're going to fail. There's a process that is meant to go through that you have to go through that you learn at each level to allow yourself to be the best version of yourself. And I think that patience, as you alluded to, is one of the biggest challenges that people have, is the biggest challenge of building a brand. And so then I'm sitting here and saying, okay, so this person that has maybe been in the business for 20, 25 years, you know, they built their business the old-fashioned way before the internet and social media was really a thing. But now they want to continue to do something different and build a brand. But they're like, well, this is too late. Like, for me to go through this and learn all this, I've been doing it already 25, 30 years. Like, what am I going to learn? I already know everything. What do you have to say to those people? Not that there's anybody like that on the podcast, but this is for other people that may have, they may have a friend that's like that, of course.
You're not my client, right? Like, if you think you have nowhere to go, nowhere to grow, nothing like to learn from here, you're not our client. And I'm okay with that. I would say you're wrong.
Tell me more about that. Right? Why are they wrong? Why can you start at any age?
Well,
no matter, or experience
my,
level.
My favorite example, like my favorite, whatever you go and call it, is when's the best time to plant a tree? 20 years ago. When's the second best time? Today. All right. It's the same exact thing. Personal branding isn't going anywhere. It's only becoming a bigger and bigger, bigger impact in the world of how people decide to buy and who they decide to work with. It matters, right? And so if you're going, I'm going to lose out and the market's becoming so saturated and, you know, I don't want to, I've been stagnant for X amount of years. It's going, well, if you've, right? It's the definition of crazy, doing the same thing over and over. Okay, great. That worked for the last 25 years. That's fine. You can keep doing that. But if your business isn't where you want it to be and you're going, why is that person getting this opportunity? Why did they decide to work with that one? I'm just as good as all these people. Well, guess what? You might be, but no one knows who you are. And so if you're getting frustrated because all these people are getting attention or they're getting business and you feel like that should be me, well, you need to give people a reason for it to be you, right? They don't just know, you have to tell them. And so I think that a lot of times when I meet those people, they're going, I just don't get why I'm not in that room. I'm better than all those people. Like, because no one knows who you are. And so when you think about your personal brand, reputation is results and reach. It's what have you done and who actually knows about it is what makes up your reputation. And that could be positive or negative, and we don't have to get in that. But I think your brand is one of the easiest ways to build your business because it compresses the trust timeline. So in any new relationship, especially in financial services, where you're helping people with their life savings, with all of their investments, with like, this is one of the highest levels of trust required in a relationship is working with a financial advisor, right? And so that can take a long time to build. And the way that you shorten that time frame is by having a brand because it provides, it shows people you're credible, you're seen, they feel like they know you, feel like they align with you. They're seeing other people say things about you, right? They see you everywhere. And there's a transference of trust that is happening by you having a brand that you don't even have to say to them because they can see it.
You know, and y'all had released a study, and we'll put a link into the into the show notes about the study about personal brand trends. And I found it interesting, and I'd love for you to talk on this a little bit. The personal brand versus a corporate brand, because to that point, you know, especially in financial services, where money is emotional, it's relational. It's there. You've got to have a person there, right? My mission is I want to help every single person in the United States have access to a human financial advisor because that is there's value there. There's so much value there, and so. There's some people though that rely on their company to provide them the results, but ultimately there's more value, at least that's what the trends are showing. There's more value to the mass segment of the population to, that believe in a personal brand and not necessarily a corporate brand. And it's because they can connect with someone. But tell what is it that you see with regards to the benefit, even if you're in a large organization that has a good brand reputation, why it's still valuable to go and build your personal brand?
Mm-hmm. Well, just because the company has a great reputation doesn't mean you have one, right? And people know the difference, but people don't care. If you look at the study, and I don't have the data memorized anymore, it's been a while since I had a talk about this. However, with that being said, all the data points to people are more likely to invest or spend money with or spend more money if the founder, owner, executive, whatever, has a personal brand. I have found in my own business by me building my brand and not even, I haven't even gone all in on mine yet. I've been slowly doing mine for years. I've been able to double my speaking fees just from it. I've been able to get people to reach out to me a lot faster or return my call a lot faster because of credibility that they see online. It's even helped my dating life, but that's a fun fact in the study. But with that being said, if you look at what's happening today, and again, I don't remember all the case studies, but years ago, like less than 5 years ago, Victoria's Secret did the largest corporate rebrand in history. And they went from this, I don't know what their marketing strategy necessarily was before, catalogs, whatever, but now they started working with influencers. So like Priyanka Chopra, right? So huge actress, huge following, but they started partnering with her and sponsoring her to attract more people like her to their brand. If you look at Coca-Cola, I think it was Ronaldo had a Coca-Cola in front of him at a press conference. And because of that, like stock in Coca-Cola just went skyrocketed. If you look at athletes, when they switch teams, like there's a crazy amount of money that goes into new merchandise that because those teams know that consumers are going to want that new jersey. They're going to want that, you know, whatever it might be, his name. That happens in soccer, basketball, all of it. It's like the team doesn't necessarily get more followers. The player has the followers, right? Mm-hmm. And because the player has the followers, they attract the audience to the team, to the company, to spend money on all the swag that represents them. And so it's just like it's over and over and over again. If you look at your own social feed, right? Like I don't follow Spanx. I follow Sarah Blakely. Because I find her inspiring and aspiring, right? And I love her content. And so I didn't follow Jamie Kern Lima from It Cosmetics. She sold it years ago, but I never followed It Cosmetics. I always followed Jamie as the founder of it because I'm interested in her. And so if you just even look at who you pay attention to, is it the company or is it the person? And chances are it's the person.
Yeah, so true. All right, I'm going to let you go here, but I have one question before we transition into our final two closing questions that we ask everybody. I mean, we could talk for hours, and I find this super interesting. Y'all are extremely bright on this, and I'm just so happy to have had this conversation. But, you know, and I think it's like in step 5 or 6 of the process that you were mentioning, but it's the idea of scaling your personal brand. And I think that becomes a challenge. You know, so what's some lessons that you can learn as you bring more people in to helping to build your personal brand to create the consistency and the follow through that it's still you and it's all aligned to what you said, right? So you don't fall into that trap that we alluded to at the beginning where you just have all these people sporadic and going from there. So what is the key to then having a team help to scale and continue to promote and push a personal brand?
I 100% it's clarity on what your brand is. Clarity on who you serve, what problem you solve, how you're solving it, the way you're, you know, the business model for it. Being so clear on that it can be communicated to everyone and they're able to read what we call a brand positioning statement with your avatar persona and your brand mantra and look at just one sheet of paper with all these details on it and they go, I know who this is. I know what we're about and I'm in line and I can create for that. So I think that that's the number one thing is if you don't have clarity, no one else on your team can either. And if it's not documented and you don't have a system for it, it can't be repeated, right? So I would say clarity.
Love it. Love it. Okay. I'm going to stop. I've got more questions that I want to ask, but I got to be cognizant of your time and our listeners' time. So maybe we might just have to have you back on someday here soon. But before I let you go, I have a thirst for curiosity and I like to learn from people smarter than me. And I do so by reading. So I always like to ask my guests, what's one book out there that you think everybody should read or reread if they've already read it before?
This is one that I'm in the middle of. I'm not done with, but I'm loving it, is Limitless by Jim Quick.
Love that. That is a great one. I've read parts of that one and it's phenomenal. Yeah. Last question. We talked about a lot of things, mainly personal brand, but you know, and it may be something from what we talked about or what we haven't talked about. But what's one actionable piece of advice that you think that our listeners can take away today that they can implement either today or tomorrow and better themselves, their family, their business, whatever it may be?
Well, I'm just going to stick with the theme of personal branding. If there was anything on here today that you were going, okay, I want to learn more about this thing. I can see the value for me. I have been thinking about it and I want to take action. I would just encourage you to reach out and have a call with our team. We have a link for that. Can I share the link?
Yeah, we'll share the link in the show notes.
Yeah, it's freebrandcall.com/LELLE. But I would just encourage you to take action and have a conversation. And it's no pressure. It's just learning more. Us learn about you. And if it's a fit, great. If not, no big deal. But I would say, you know, don't keep putting it off if it's something that's been weighing on you.
I love that. And we'll put that link in the show notes. But if people want to continue to follow you, as I'm sure they're inspired by you just as I am and want to continue to follow the journey and stay in touch, what's the best way for people to get in touch, stay in touch, and continue to follow all the great things you're doing?
Yeah, LinkedIn and Instagram are the two places I live the most. It's L_Petrillo, P-E-T-R-I-L-L-O.
L, I really appreciate your time today. Thanks so much for this insight. It was a fun conversation. Stay well, be well, and we'll talk soon.
All right, catch you later.
Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of Bridging the Gap. Don't forget to give us a rating and let us know what you think.